Great. Well, thank you everyone for coming. Yeah, as Darren's pointed out, we're due to be here till, what was it, 12:30 or something?
Yeah, on the schedule till 12:30, but we'll only go till 11:45.
Yeah.
So if people want to go to another session on the second part, you'd be able to go to that. We won't monopolize all your time.
Great, so let's keep it punchy. Let's go to the next slide then, and then we can do quick intros. Darren?
I'm a Senior Vice President of Product Management with EP. Been in the entertainment industry for 12 years now. As the founder of Synchronize, the technology that is now part of EP's overall suite, including Movie Magic, Smart Start, Smart Time, Smart Accounting.
And Martin, I'll give you the mic.
Yeah. Hey everyone, so Martin Mazur, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Security Officer for EP. About 20 years in the with the CISO title, Fortune 100, 75, Global Defense. I started in the defense world a million years ago.
Great, thanks Martin. And Joe Francis, I'm from TPG, an investment firm that partnered with Entertainment Partners. Great, all right. So let's start with Martin, you're a veteran of the security space, as we've just heard. What are you, I know you're in constant conversations with our clients. What are the big themes that you're picking up from a security and identity perspective?
Yeah, the conflation or the aggregation of identities into various supply partners, being a supplier to the studios primarily, is really what's driving a lot of the conversation. As more studios and more productions move to service models, which obviously EP supplies or provides, the security models are changing. And you know, what used to be holistic and enclosed in the studios themselves have just become disparate. Productions using things like Gmail for all their, you know, their independents are using Gmail for all their identities and trying to aggregate that into a studio environment. And then trying to come into the, you know, the supplier side, to the EP side, for all the services we provide, that security model is changing, and it's a challenge, particularly in the entertainment industry. From my perspective, it needs some growth and maturity in general. And I think what we're seeing is, how do we kind of help the studios enforce security is really the question we're hearing.
Yeah. So if we go to the next slide. So I think let's just get a little bit specific then, and we have touched on it earlier on, around the issues around GDPR and the California Privacy Act and so on. But regardless of the legislation, protecting identities is just the right thing to do. It'd be really great to hear what you are seeing in the market and what the studios are telling you around the very specific challenges they're facing and how they're starting to think about overcoming them.
Sure. So, like I said, I think we're seeing kind of two different security models and two different kind of security engagements. There's the studio engagement side, and then there's the production data engagement side. And they're really two, you know, particularly I see some studio folks here, they're really two different kind of thinking. Doesn't mean that it isn't the same security model trying to get to, but it's really two different kind of discussions. So on the studio side, these are things we're hearing from relating to overall security, but particularly around identity issues and identity engagements. Compliance is becoming really, really challenging and growing. Obviously, privacy is becoming much more consumerized, as well as legislative enforcement. CCPA, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but it's becoming very endemic for all of us. Obviously, many of the global studios have already had GDPR programs, but they're starting to see those requirements. The idea, though, is that the security is becoming mandatory, and I think that's different for some of the studio or the entertainment world. The studios are seeing that data is not centralized anymore. It used to be all in some repository in the studio and some backlot data center. It's not anymore. Studios are sourcing a lot of their services to EP and other like companies. How do you manage? How do you store? How do you enforce? How do you put policy around this data that's no longer in your house? Same vein, but you know, kind of broadens the aspect. It's, you know, multiple partners and suppliers, but it's not just sourcing a service. It's also sourcing your IT services as well. You know, who isn't in a cloud environment today in some form or fashion, and how do you enforce, once again, all the security requirements, all the policy requirements, the compliance requirements, and the privacy requirements now, that end-to-end component. Being on the receiver side of some of these requirements, They're asking us, you know, the engagement model between the studios and the partners to the suppliers like us, are detailed assessments. And of course, there's a lot of governance coming around all that as well.
And Marty, have you seen that change over the years?
Yeah, I've been with EP 3 years. The conversations we were having with the studios just 3 years ago, to be frank, were really light on security. Pretty generic. Hey, do you have firewalls and that kind of stuff, right? Now it's in 3 years, it's significantly more advanced. Number of studio folks here that I know I work with on a regular basis, they're in our offices now. They're sitting in our offices and say, okay, yeah, you've got all these things. Show me how you do it. And it's not so aloof anymore. Multiple databases of information. So, you know, we as a partner for many of the production houses aggregate data and then send data out elsewhere because we have partners and suppliers. So the conversations with the students and what they're thinking about is, okay, yeah, we hired you, EP, to do something for us, but you're also using a partner now too. Rightfully so, because they're providing added value to our customer. But how are you making sure that you're securing those partners because they're your supplier? So that's really in focus right now with the studios.
Martin, you touched on security coming to our offices now. Why are they doing that?
Really to focus on the true validation of what we're doing. Mm. Before, like I said, about 3 years ago, even before that, in my understanding, it would be just, you know, fill out an assessment worksheet and just, you know, tell me you're really doing it and we're good to go. Mm. Now they're in our office looking at our how we encrypt data at rest and how we manage encryption keys and making sure we've got the right policies and asking our staff, hey, how do you do these things? Not just, hey, the CISO's just, you know, giving us a song story anymore. Mm. And the last one is, and this is particular to the world of EP particularly, is the manual workflows using PII. I think, you know, what we're concerned about, and I think on the production side, and I think what we're hearing from the studios, is the multiple worlds of paper versus digital. We obviously provide a lot of digital services for the studios and productions, but there's a heck of a lot of paper in this industry. And these rules like CCPA also apply to paper. It's not you know, unique to digital environments. How are you going to manage, and how are we going to help, you know, with the help secure and put those same governance and same security? A social security number written on a piece of paper stored in a box is just as at risk as a piece of data running in our database, right? With that same social security number on it. They're asking us, how are you going to help, and what are you doing about it? And that's really a key conversation we're having.
Great. Okay. What about on the productions then?
The productions themselves, you know, we directly speak with a lot of the productions, either via the studios or directly, a lot of independents as well. To say it frankly, forget all the security stuff, give me speed is what we hear, right? And I think, you know, the studio folks are going to shake their heads yes here. Enforcing security from the productions is a challenge, right? They have, their, you know, obviously creative side, but also, you know, they have their goals, and trying to overlay security can be a challenge. How do we think about that? And maybe Darren can chime on this, but how we think about it is making security embedded into the product. So it is not an adherence, it's just something that's in part of the value, part of the work streams that they're using our system. Make something easy to use and it's not an adherence anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. We're gonna go through a little bit like what we've done from a product perspective to make this easy, but you know, if, as you all know, if you have to do extra things, it's less inclined to do it, right? Everyone gets annoyed with MFA, right? Who doesn't get annoyed with MFA? But you know, it's necessary, right? That's the only way you can truly stop, you know, email password hacks, right? And so those things, you know, kind of finding the right balance, right, and kind of moving people through that change process have really been the two biggest things that productions have faced over the last really 12 years that I've been working. And we'll go through that in a little bit more detail in the next section.
The productions, you know, how do you secure multiple tools? You know, what we hear, sadly, you know, maybe sadly, but Gmail and Google Docs are the biggest thing that they use every day, right? And all these tools and all this enforcement, all these capabilities and all this data is floating in some, you know, freeware, open source type of tool. And that's scary, right? It's scary for the production. It's scary for us because obviously we have the best interests of the studios at heart. And we want to secure it as well. But how do you go secure a Google Docs that's open to share for everybody, right? So these are the things that they're concerned about, and obviously we're concerned about as well. You know, we hear this directly. It's one of the things we're really focused on with some of our identity tools. How to just deal with the multiple passwords. You know, as, you know, individuals, we have too many passwords, too many different types of policies. You know, it's just a pain from a personal perspective. The productions here that are painful too. They might use our tools, they might use the production studio tools, they use the third-party tools, competitor tools, whatever. They all have different passwords. So how do we put a single identity and make it pervasive throughout the industry? Certainly something we're interested in exploring as we kind of grow our capabilities as well as, you know, work with studios. But there's no great answer here. It's something we just need to help with.
Yeah, there's definitely a spinal tap effect in that, right? If it goes to 11, we want, you know, passwords with 25 characters, right? And it's just
embrace
right.
Two-factor.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we see a lot of that. You know, it's just kind of knee-jerk reactions, like, well, that's really not a best practice. The more complicated you make things, the more likely people are to just write it down because they can't. No one can remember 25 character passwords.
Yeah, 25 character complex passwords. The only thing anybody's doing is writing it down, putting it in a spreadsheet, or maybe ideally using like a password manager tool, which would be good in that scenario.
Post it on the phone.
Yeah, which is likely being used. But
exactly.
But the common is the studios maybe will disparate on their policies as well. There's no one single studio policy that's pervasive for the partners like us. So, you know, one studio has a policy, another studio has a policy. Remember, a lot of these production folks are multiple productions, right? So they log into our products with one policy because our studio demands it. And that same tool, application that we provide, has, they log in again for the other show that they're actively working on both shows, right? It's not like a, you know, serial thing. They have a different policy. I mean, that's just too much to handle, right? So that's a key problem that we want to solve for.
And we always have to, you know, pick on the grips, right? You know, but trying to get a grip to install, you know, an MFA token on their computer, on their handheld, you know, their phone, you know, good luck, right? You know, they're mostly, if they even have a phone, half the time they're on a old flip phone because they, you know, they're working construction, they're breaking everything all the time, and so, you know, we like to pick on them, but they are the use case, right? That you have to solve for.
Yeah, same problem as the studios face here. Multiple partners and systems, right? Same kind of idea. They're using a lot of tools, free tools, commercial tools, studio demanded tools. So things like we're hearing from studios, I'm trying to use federation, identity federation. Come to the studio first and let the studio integrate their identities to the partners like us. Seems great, but I'm sure that's much more challenging than I just said. So there's a lot of reasons why that's challenging. But those are the things we have to think about, and that's what the productions are thinking about as well. And lastly, the obvious stuff, the audits, which are pervasive in the industry, both from a security audit perspective, the guilds and unions, all those audit requirements of collecting data, storing data, managing data, making sure it's ready to use, speed for that data availability, because the slower the audit, the slower, you know, the more cost it is. I don't know if you want to talk about audits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, productions hate audits, right? It gets in the way of actually getting their stuff done. So, you know, again, it's one of those things where if you can keep them out of getting into audit territory, then you're helping them do their jobs, right? Because they don't always, you know, do stuff to trigger audits knowingly, right? It's generally because they did something they didn't know that they were doing wrong. So the, you know, again, systems in place to help automate that stuff so it happens automatically, and they don't even have to do anything.
Have we missed anything on the list? Yeah.
I guess one thing that triggers for me is how do we handle PII centrally from a studio perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic, right? So I can tell you, I'll give you our EP's perspective. We have a lot of tools to ingest digitally and securely the way to manage things like start cards, right? Start paperwork. And having the studios enforce a digital way of managing that, we still challenge, we beat up our own teams for, you know, taking in a start card through email. You know, it's a PDF they filled out with social security numbers, they emailed it to themselves, right? We say, don't do that. Hey, but the customer is the only way they're going to work that way, right? So we see that, and, you know, having the studios like Sony or somebody help, you know, enforce that would be ideal. Using digital paperwork or digital processes, enforcing even things like encrypted email, we'll accept an encrypted email if that's the least amount, you know, least thing that can be used. But just helping enforce that is really important. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. And I have one more question around
sure.
audit. As George may know, auditors love me, right? And I love auditors. some of the dialogues we've had with auditors is that technology moves much quicker than the audit process ever had.
Sure.
Does, right? So sometimes when we're adopting a new way of working or new paradigms, explaining these auditors, whether they understand or not, becomes difficult. That, yeah, last year we did something one way, this year we did it a different way,
right.
But overall it's the same thing. Have you guys come across that, and how have you addressed it?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, it is dynamic. I mean, as we build out our capabilities, we build in more advanced tools, more security protocols, more integrated responsibilities in our products themselves. We try to build in some capabilities to make it easier for the audit process. Availability of reporting is usually the biggest thing, right? So how do you get the detailed reporting that you need? What we try to strive, this is maybe a little too in the weeds, but we strive in the weeds to do a continuous monitoring, continuous auditing process. Mm-hmm. So we're always looking at the controls and validating against what we think the policies are, and then provide that data to our customers in real time. And obviously we work a lot with Sony, and that data is really available in our systems and our products, and we keep advancing that even more, so we know, because that's the thing that you need most. You need the direct visibility in our products from the data, for the data you need for audits.
Before we go on to a little bit more detail on the regulation, Darren, as you're thinking about where we're going from a product roadmap perspective, how do you reflect on this set of challenges?
Yeah, I mean, Martin did a good job of touching on, I think, what a lot of the issues are. I mean, when we started with Synchronize, right, no one put scripts in the cloud, and we changed that. Right? It took a while for people to get comfortable with that. But we did it in a secure manner, right, so such that, Jamie Lannister was on Jimmy Kimmel talking about how, we made it hard for him to have to read his script on an iPad. Over 8 years, 8 seasons of that show, nothing had ever leaked except the one person took a picture of their script on their little patio in Corsica. But that, migrated over time, right? It became more, as we introduced these tools and capabilities, right, they realized, the call sheet is actually a secure document, right? We don't want that just getting blasted out so the whole world knows where everyone's going to be exactly when, the next day. And so everyone can show up and get their pictures or whatever it is they want to do. And so it just kind of progressed and progressed and progressed to the point where we have shows now, and you guys have all everyone in here has shows where they, lock down everything. No information leaves the production, right? Everything is viewed through a closed-loop security model that stops anything from being viewed outside of the control of the production or the studio. When we were doing all that stuff, we weren't really collecting a lot of PII. We had, name and password, basically. So that was really all we had to protect from an identity perspective. But now that we're digitizing onboarding, we're digitizing time tracking, we're digitizing purchase orders, our new version of budgeting is going to be cloud-based, so all your information, your budget's going to now be in a database, right? Names, rates, for actors, things like that. We're having to go back and kind of make sure that we're in compliance, and with Martin and his team's help, the applications are being able to store all that information. So the biggest thing we get when we ask people to do digital onboarding is that, how do I know this is safe, right? And so we instruct our clients how to answer that question, give them some information, but at the end of the day, it's all about trust, right? And authenticity and being able to protect that. And now with the new legislation, being able to unprotect it, right, and get it out of the system when they ask. We've built that into all of our applications. We have members of Martin's team that are actually assigned to our development teams. They participate in the development projects just like a developer, but from a security perspective, right, making sure that, hey, you need to, this is how you need to store this. We need to make sure we encrypt everything. This is how we do encryption. We don't make our own keys. We don't stick keys somewhere we don't know where they are. All those kinds of things. And so we built that into the construction of the systems. We go through our own internal audits with our technology and our development. And then we use outside vendors to help test, pen test all of our applications as well. So And then Martin's got a lot of other secret things going on in the background that that are, you know, ensuring that as we're storing the data, right, we've moved those systems to AWS, right? So now we're fully in the cloud with that. There's a lot of benefits to that, but you know, it's just a little bit of extra work to just ensure that information is truly secure and not being shared. I mean, you know, SmartStart's a great example, right? You got social security number, you got addresses, you got, you know, contacts, you got all this information. And we used to joke when we were building that program, we were on a studio's lot, and there was a minivan with their hatch open in the back, just sitting in the middle of the parking lot, and all it said was these, you know, these big banker boxes. It just said, start cards, start cards, start cards, start cards. And it was just sitting there. We got into our meeting, came back out, and it was still just sitting there with the hatchback open. And we're like, how is that more secure? Right? Because there's a lot of concern as we were doing Smart Start around, you know, this is you're putting all this information in the cloud. And like, yeah, but you got boxes sitting over here in some guy's, you know, office that have been sitting there for 10 years. You have no idea who's been through those boxes. Right? You have no digital record, no any of that. So, you know, that's kind of the evolution that we've seen, you know, and you know, knock on wood, you know, we continue to I think be the leaders in providing that level of security. You know, we've been through with our Smart Start and our Smart Time applications. We've been through, I think, just about every security audit with our studio partners, and have, you know, passed everyone. You know, where some things were found, we address them immediately. We're now, and those products are now in use by many, many studios. We've onboarded over 150,000 people now through our electronic thing. Onboarding system, Smart Start, and we process a couple hundred thousand electronic time cards every year. That number is going to grow exponentially next year as we roll out the next version of that product. So.
So, protecting identity, a good thing to do, but now we've got some even greater pressure in the legislation. Why don't you talk us through that, Martin? Give us a facts, not fear.
I'll try. So CCPA, I'm sure everybody's kind of heard about it. I know a lot of folks have already been working on it. It's GDPR for California. Does that make sense to you? California Consumer Privacy Act is protecting personal information. I think Alex on the kickoff call or speech earlier was talking about that. It's a benefit for the consumers as individuals. I think it's really good. But for business, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. So let me just kind of talk about it. So its impact for both consumer and employee data. So I'm going to try to give you as much answers as I know, but there is still some evolution of this as well. It was finalized about 2 weeks ago in its formal mechanism. I don't think Newsom's actually signed off on it yet, but he will, I think. But it's impactful for both consumer and employee data. Consumer data is easy, right? Anybody's logging into your website and, you know, it's open to the public. They can log in, download a piece of software, or, you know, get some widget or whatever. That's consumer data, right? And that is impactful by the end of this year. So that means you got to be ready for all the conditions, which I'm not going to talk about too much about, but it is impactful. Employee data got a moratorium for 1 year, so that's 1/21 when you have to be impactful. For us, that's a big issue, big impact for us, because we obviously pay a lot of people and got a lot of employee data. But there's a disparate approach. So it's transfer of data of use. Data use is a must, right? So once again, I'm not going too detailed in the actual provisions, but the transparency, just like GDPR, is vital, right? How you use data, where that data goes, both internally as well as to your supply chain, or if you sell it for advertising reasons or all those marketing reasons, you got to say what you do with that data. How do you do that? You got to do a data mapping exercise. That data mapping exercise, if you've never done something like that as an organization, start now. but it is understanding where all that data is used. It is something simple as, like, somebody browsing your website, so you collect your IP address. That is consumer data at this point. But it's also just how the data moves internally, even your email systems, of course, your marketing systems, Salesforce, and all those kind of things. Those are impacted because those are consumer data. It is data you're moving around to multiple parties. So, you know, it's got the traditional, if you're familiar with GDPR, it's got the classic, you know, hey, I can call you up or I can email you, or by provision in CCPA, you must go to a website and it must have this very certain characteristics in this website. So I can say, hey, look, I don't want you to, you know, have my data anymore. I want you to forget everything you know about me. Well, that's okay. You don't have to do that if you use it for any business reasons. Like they signed up for marketing and they can tell you, I don't want to be part of that marketing process anymore. Like for us, if we, you know, we're a payroll company, so if we don't have your information, your social number, we can't pay you. So I think unless you don't want to be paid, we're going to use your data, right? A lot more granular than I'm making it, but they do have the right as a consumer to get their data forgotten. So having a process to actually go through your workflows and after you've done your data mapping, so you know where all that data is, and you can satisfactorily and succinctly say, I know where that data is, and I removed it, is really the key action. There's a bunch of new rights on use of data. Once again, you may have to ask, and this is a little convoluted, so I'd say, work with your legal teams, do you have to ask before you move data to another point? Not necessarily for marketing reasons, but for a partner. So using a partner for particular data needs, you might have to ask the individual for their permission. And, there's this superfluous, we must have advanced security. It's in every bill and every legislation you can ever think of. What is best practice security? I'll tell you what we think it is. We think it's an ISO 27001 level of security. So we are an ISO 27001 certified. ISO is International Standards Organization. We have a number of standards, not just security or cybersecurity. We think that's the benchmark. If you don't have a framework, I know the studios do, of course, but if you don't have a framework, you need to get one and just align to it. So if you can say, hey, I align to this framework. Whatever you think that best framework is, you should have a framework. And then the scary stuff of the significant penalties aspect. So if a company directly misuses this consumer or employee data, meaning they sell it to a marketing without asking permission or something like that, it's $7,500 per violation. So 100,000 people times 7,500, something like that, is the pretty scary numbers. Our perspective is, for us, it's impactful coming 1/21. We've got some things to do by the end of the year. We're already working on. But, don't take any of this lightly. This has got real teeth to it. All right. 2020 for the consumer data, 2021 for employee data. All right. Before we close up on CCPA, one of the things we still need to continue engaging with on the identity side is how we engage some of this data transfer, data aggregation between us and our partners, and our studios and our customers. So, there should be more collaboration. So we're going to be reaching out to a lot of our partners and studios to have a conversation about identity and some of this data. We do pass some of this between ourselves. GDPR. So GDPR has been around 2 years now.
Yeah, May 2018.
2018 was when it went to effect. Obviously a lot of what everybody does is global in nature. If you're a studio, you already have a GDPR program, it's already in place because of the significant penalties. But the reason we kind of highlight this is it's got a lot of similarities. The major difference between the two is one's an opt-in, one's an opt-out. So with GDPR, the European requirements, you have to opt in for that data to be used for this data, consumer data to be used for other purposes or purposes at all. In CCPA, fortunately, it's an opt-out. So that means we have that data and, hey, we'll ask you if it's okay, but we don't necessarily have to ask you, can we continue using it? So that's a difference. Once again, I said that. Consent of use, where it goes, much stronger requirements for consent than CCPA. Although CCPA does ask for kind of a general, can we use this data for this purpose? How companies kind of make that work, I think Google, Facebook, those kind of companies are going to kind of figure that out a little bit better than others. But, in GDPR, you do have to ask specific rights for consent of use of data. Same right to be forgotten, which has some very specific requirements. For example, CCPA, you have 45 days to respond to requests. In GDPR, I think you have 7 days. So it's much different, right? Same must have advanced security, that euphemistic, whatever advanced security is. Once again, we think it's ISO level security. That's how we benchmark our frameworks. And then the really crazy penalties in GDPR, 4% of annual turnover or revenue, up to 20 million euros. So it's got some sizable teeth.
I think it's gone way beyond that. I know British Airways was 200 million this year. Marriott International was 120 million. Google was 57 million.
Yeah, it's per violation.
Exactly.
It's per violation.
That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. So they've had multiple violations.
There was a Danish taxi company. I mean, how big is that? 120,000. It's all sizes. So it'd be interesting to see how the authorities respond to the California Consumer Privacy Act, seeing what's happening in Europe, in terms of how aggressive they want to be at enforcement and fines. And I think the surprise was that employees came in to consume the California Act.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you follow the CCPA at all, it was a lot of controversy. A lot of large organizations, you know, like the Googles and Facebooks, were positioning for employee data not to be in. You know, we prefer to kind of make it a little controversial, but we prefer the organizations to manage themselves and provide value, but maybe a little legislative requirements are tough sometimes. But it did include, so there's a clause in the Senate called AB 25 that really drove the difference between consumer and employee data, and employee data is in engaged by the 121.
All right.
And timing is now. So the reason we highlight these things is A, it's obviously everything we're thinking about, but also when we think about identities and integrating to particularly CCPA, it's going to be vital we manage those identity and security models.
Do you want to just spend a couple of minutes on that with Darren?
Yeah, real quick. I know we said we'd let you go by quarter of, so if anyone does want to go to another session, please, you're not going to hurt our feelings. But I think the biggest thing here, we talked about a bunch of these products already. One of the biggest things that we're going to be doing to work with our studios, we made a joke about, you know, there's an arms race of who has the most complex password requirements. You know, we don't want to be in that business, so we will be bringing federation out next year, the ability to federate with individual studios, so you can have whatever crazy password requirements you want to have all day long. We'll just hand that off to you. You authenticate the user. You hand us back that session, and then you know you also get the you know when you take that person out of your directory, that access to our system is automatically goes away because that login won't work anymore.
Just the comment. So you know, dealing with the operational side of what EP does on a regular basis. The interesting side, when the studios take on federation, I would be, you know, when you're talking, and I'm picking on Sony, but I'm not a particular reason. when you think about the federation model, it means all provisioning, deprovisioning, and change goes to the studio, not the partner. So, you know, the productions, that first slide I said on there is need for speed. That's one of the things they mostly want us to do, right? Turn over a new ID in 2 hours. 24/7, 7 to, you know, 24/7, 365, right? The studios are not going to have that responsibility. So I just, you know, I make sure that you understand the operational aspects of federation. It's pretty dynamic in the production world.
So there's some other key things we talked on a little bit earlier. Each of our projects in Synchronize and Smart Hub each have their own unique keys. So each project has its own unique key. So even if one key were to get compromised, unlikely, you know, it would only access that one project. The hub has a separate key as well. So we do digital signatures for our Smart Start and electronically timestamp those with a third party. So we have security around that whole process. So we've got some really deep things that go down there. And so as you look at these solutions, right, they're, you know, as Martin says, right, the productions come on board, they need to get going right away, right? And trying to go through and come up with a new workflow around onboarding and timekeeping is challenging. And sometimes there might be simpler systems, right, that oh, this works just fine. We've used it for years. Well, you know, until you get that fine, right, then it's not so good. And so, you know, as you're working with your productions, there's always a balance there. We think we can spin these things up pretty fast. We've got a lot of experience working with productions over the years. And, you know, we're going to be working now to kind of integrate the flow of information through all that, so you're not having to download, re-upload, right? Get rid of that, those kind of processes as well, so everything stays in these secure, encrypted environments.
Yeah, two things to highlight that are coming. As Darren mentioned, that bring your own identity federation model. Really, I think it's going to have a lot of value. Once again, there's some cautionary notes. The other thing that we're working on, just to kind of advance security capabilities, is we're going to be exposing through our partners and obviously studios some data analytics. So think forensic data, security data that we collect and we use to monitor our own products and environments. We're going to expose, likely through an API, to our studios so they can consume for incident response processes. So if we see something, we'll send it out to you directly. So we're actively working on that now. A little techie, but we're trying to get that out as a beta here next year.
Great. Yeah.
All right.
Any questions?
Yeah. So you mentioned federation will be coming. Is that an option that studios can opt into, or can they still leverage the native authentication that's available for the tool?
It's opt-in. It's a feature you want, and then we have the ability to do it. If you don't, we'll still continue to. We're actually migrating all our authentication systems to a third-party, enterprise-class third-party system versus homegrown in each of the different applications. So we're consolidating that all into one place. We're actually in the process of doing that right now. We'll be done by the end of the year. If you use our systems, you now get a consistent login. It's still kind of going to different places a little bit. By the end of the year, it'll be consolidated all into one.
And then maybe a follow-on question. Do you guys have a perspective on, social identity for authentication purposes? So
bring the Apple one now.
Google, Gmail, Facebook, right, things like that.
It's worth having a conversation on. I think, we should get together with the studio CISOs and everybody to talk about that. There's trade-offs. There's pros and cons associated with that. You don't get the visibility that we can provide or see as, just pass a token between each other, right? So I think it's worth a conversation. I certainly do want to talk to the studios about that. I think it'd be interesting for us to... I think, essentially, we could support that. Techie stuff, SAML integrations between tokens, right? So it's not a big deal to do, but I think it's worth talking about. Particularly those Gmail customers, those Gmail identities.
Yeah.
Certainly, I'd rather use that than Gmail as the identity, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Facebook scares me. I don't know that I fully trust them. But Apple, Google, I think those are, those are all just, other channels to go through.
It's certainly worth talking about that.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Some key takeaways. What we're seeing, once again, when we're talking to our partners and our studio customers, there's an urgent need to get away from paper and go to a digital solution. And we're not just saying that because we sell a digital solution, but we're saying that because you cannot inventory, manage, policy, encrypt, all those kind of things, paper. You got to move to a digital solution just to put all the frameworks you need to do around security. With CCPA and others, even GDPR, of course, it's got to have a plan. And you can't do much with paper, I'd just be very frank. You can put a lot of security on a digital piece of digital data, but there's an urgent need to kind of think through that. MFA, of course, is needed, trying to get away from 25 character passwords. All the security principles and entropies and all those kind of things don't make sense with 25 character passwords. It's an interesting dynamic with the entertainment industry and the productions of just saying, hey, we've got MFA, you want us to turn it on? And no, we don't, right? And it's an interesting dynamic, right? I think it would be simple, but, support for simple MFA is important, and it's a need to be focused on.
Real quick, a couple of folks from the studios, do you run into kit rental problems when you try and enforce MFA on the productions?
I can't speak to that. I don't know.
Okay.
To be frank, I don't think productions uses too much MFA.
Okay.
It's the phone problem, like whose phone are they going to use, and you get paid to use the phone and all that?
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't want to have things on their personal phones, and they ask for it.
And Unions require you get paid for that if you do.
Yeah.
You put on
the
personal phone.
The device management software that usually gets put on there. They question what you can do, so if you have an explicit statement on what we are looking at, what we can do with that, they're generally okay.
And we don't really support SMS-based 2FA, so it's really either soft token or hard token, and that introduces another set of complexities.
Exactly.
So third point here, know where all your data lives, right? So for CCPA, you're going to have to do this. If you haven't done this for GDPR yet, you're going to have to do a data mapping exercise. For all the data that's in scope, if you're going to do all the data that's just in scope, you might as well do it for kind of every data, because you're going to do this massive data mapping activity. You might as well do it, right? So in that, you're going to find out that there's some suppliers that have some data, some unapproved Dropbox connections, and all that kind of fun stuff, right? So the first thing is, know where all that data is, and then you can start putting security parameters and enforcement capabilities on top of it, right? It seems obvious, but you're going to have to kind of do this now as far as CCPA. Security hygiene is obviously the thing that everybody starts with, how to make things just kind of basic security principles. Studios obviously have that in place, but when you're talking to somebody's productions or smaller suppliers that haven't invested in security, start with the hygiene conversation first, right? How do you patch? How do you put basic firewalls? How do you put basic controls on identity? How do you turn on logging? Those basic hygiene activities are missing in a lot of the suppliers and partners. And then lastly, we're just reiterating, CCPA is going to bite. right? So if you don't have a program in place today, or your partners that don't have a program in place, you know, get one. I can tell you right now, and this sounds terrible, not one studio has asked EP what's their CCPA plan.
What's
right?
your CCPA?
A big tick. So I think everybody's still trying to figure it out, to be honest. But I think we've got a good plan, and we're happy to share it. But, if you know, once again, this does go down to your suppliers. I think that's the biggest risk in all this, right? You got these small suppliers that maybe don't have a real security investment model. So that's it. Any questions?
Great. Thank you, Darren and Martin.